What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Behind the Wheel podcast, where today we're talking about the mod ladder. What is the mod ladder? So we were talking about sort of the steps that people take when modifying their cars, whether it's a daily driver, a weekend warrior, a full-blown track car, or maybe something that kind of does everything. What steps you take typically to start building that car? I think a lot of people will assume, Nick, that because of where we are, we're going to save wheels and tires first, right? Yep. What do you think?
So
give me some scenarios.
I definitely fall into that camp. I do fully believe that tires are probably one of the most important purchases when it comes to any project car. It's one of the easiest ways to increase the performance from a vehicle without doing major modifications. Most passenger car tires are not up to the standard. I mean, I say that with a grain of salt, because nowadays you do have manufacturers that are putting Michelin Pilot Sports on and good quality and some of the extreme contact stuff from Continental. So
depending on the model, right?
Like correct. If
it's a Civic Type R or something, it's going to have better tires than a base model, right?
Yeah. So, and that's kind of where my mindset always went with it was, you know, get the wheels to be lighter, obviously. And then also to have a tire that has increased performance, not necessarily just traction. Like, I'm not saying go out and just throw a set of drag slicks on your car all of a sudden, but something that is balanced for the vehicle will increase the performance of the vehicle over what you already have and fits your needs. And that's the biggest thing. Don't throw a summer tire on if you're going to be driving 6 months below freezing temperatures.
Right.
So as we're all experiencing here.
Right. Yeah. You probably don't want to grab, you know, a set of R compounds if you're daily driving in New York, especially right now. But I think a lot of it comes down to where you are in life in terms of your level of maturity, for sure. But also how much money you have in your bank account and how much money you have coming in.
Yeah.
If you've got, you know, a mortgage and kids, you're probably not going to dump a bunch of money into a car all at once unless you're paid like that, unless you got, you know, like Nick money, right?
Oh yeah. Okay.
But if you're if you're doing this a little at a time, I think you need to plan out what it is you're after. Are you looking for something that's going to give you a specific look, or are you looking for something that's going to give you elevated performance, or a little bit of both? You can mix it up, right? I think for me, when I was much younger and dumber, I got my first, you know, my first car or two. You know, this is a long time ago, but I made the mistake of wanting the car to be lowered, right? I had bought this CRX, 1990 CRX SI. And so at that time, it was pretty common to cut your springs. That was like a normal thing, right? There weren't a ton of suspension options out there. This is before coilovers became like the norm, you know? This is even before the sleeve coilovers, the cheapy, you know, sleeve style, right? So, you know, cutting springs was pretty normal. So I think when I got my car, it was only stock for maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks. And then me and my buddy, you know, got in there and, you know, started hacking coils, which was just the worst idea. But at the time, that was sort of like a rite of passage, right? Like that was like the first mod you would do. So that and taking off the airbox or something stupid like that. So, you know, at that time, you know, you kind of make those early mistakes if you didn't know. This is before, you know, the internet and all the information we have available now. So I did that. And then obviously the ride was awful. It looked good, but it was like a rite of passage to have like your mud flaps scraping on the ground a little bit. You know what I mean? When you made a turn. So anyway, it was a big mistake. I did that. And then after a while, finally made the decision to buy actual springs. I think I got New Speed springs and threw those on there. It lifted the car up quite a bit, but it handled so much better, right? It was night and day difference. I may have cut off a coil of those two just because I was stupid. But regardless, you make those kind of mistakes. Looking back, I would never do that now. Mm-hmm. But it was like a give and take, right? It was sort of like learn as you go type thing, you know?
So while we're on the topic of changing out springs, now a big mistake that I see a lot of people make is not pairing a proper shock to the spring. In case anyone doesn't know, if you take your factory shock and you put a lowering spring on it, the shock travel rate is incorrect at that point. You're now using that shock in an ineffective range versus where it was cycling before, where you had a larger range for it to cycle. So a lot of times when we would do that, we would switch over to like KYB yellows, Takiko blues, something like that. Were those around at that time? Like, I know that it's kind of where it kind of started was back then. Because, I mean, my whole time has been coilovers.
It wasn't all black and white. Relax, relax.
Okay,
So, like,
just making sure.
with that time, there were like Tokiko Blues. You know, there was Koni adjustables and things like that. Most guys weren't doing that at the time, but then I think it was as we learned, you know, you can get a much better, you know, handling vehicle. You know, and I don't want to make it seem like if you put a set of springs in your car and you don't change the shocks, it's, you know, life and death. It's just going to change the handling characteristics. It's not going to be as good as it could be. You're leaving performance on the table, so to speak.
You also shorten the life of the shock. That was also part
Yeah,
of
for sure.
that whole thing
For
where
sure.
you're I mean, we're talking massively shortening the life.
But then on the other end of that too, you can also overdo it, right? Like if you have a vehicle that you're just daily driving and you want to get a you want to get it down a little bit, maybe put some wheels and tires on it. Maybe going with like an Ohlins, like, you know, DFV is not the best one. You know what I mean? Like you don't have to, you know,
Yeah,
spend
no, and I
$25,
fully
$30.
agree. A like a KWV3 is not necessary for your daily use street car. And I think that's something that's also been lost on the modern car culture, that not every build has to be that level of, okay, I need track performance parts, I need this on my daily, like on the car that you're using on the street. It's not necessary to have spherical bearings, and it's not necessary to have a, you know, getting into engines and stuff like a massive cam where you can't even drive the car. There is something to be said about useful tuning of a vehicle, useful upgrading of a vehicle, where the car becomes more than the sum of its parts versus just throwing parts on it to make something.
Yeah, and I think the benefit now is obviously you have a ton more content and information online you can learn from, right? Like there's so many people that have made the mistakes before you have that you can just kind of look it up, figure it out, you know. And I think that kind of takes away a little bit of the sort of the little by little portion of the ladder. Like, you know, in the old days, people would be, you know, adding parts on, expecting a certain amount of performance. Maybe they got it, maybe they didn't. They weren't even dyno tuning that much, so it was more like, you know, seat of the pants filling. But now, if you get like, let's say, an FL5, for example, you look online, you can see if I add this intake, you know, add Honda data, I do a front pipe, down pipe exhaust, I know I'm going to get about this amount of power, and you're usually like right in that area,
Yeah,
right?
now you have the recipes and you know what the cake is going to be when you're
Yeah,
done, where before you were
it's.
kind of pioneering your way through it.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, like I like that because it lets you know exactly what you're doing. You spend your money wisely, I think, that way, and you know exactly what you're getting into. But I do sort of miss sometimes that sort of like guessing and like trial and error portion of it. If you know, between the two though, I prefer the more modern era of being able to know what I'm getting into. But it was definitely a lot of you know, adding a cam and going, man, I hope it adds the 10 horsepower that company says it's going to add, but you know, typically it didn't. But
No.
you know, there were just combinations that people were not fully aware of at the time, and they were kind of just guessing at it a little bit, you know. Especially for the Honda world, like in the mid-90s, turbocharging was like still pretty new. So you're kind of guessing at it, like how many pounds should I run? You know, what type of you know, boost control. That was pretty important too. People were popping engines left and right. So that was a major part of it too, you know.
So do you feel that that there's less innovation now because you have those recipes, you have those, all right, I know this works. So do you think there's less experimentation because of that? Do you think that we're having,
No.
so you still think that
No.
there's, I see, I feel like I disagree because
Well, wait, are you talking from a DIY like in your garage level, or are you talking
yeah.
from a manufacturer level?
No, I think from a do it yourself level, I think
Yeah,
that
no, I agree with you. Yeah,
yeah,
this level for sure.
that's lost out because now it's so simple to just go on and be like, hey, I want to do this, that, and the other thing, and I'm not going to have to come up with a way to solve this problem. Somebody's already solved it. I can go online, buy the part, throw it in. I know what I'm getting. I know what I'm doing. And I feel like every car becomes almost cookie cutter. Like I'm a Z, you know, I'm a Z1 fanboy. I order parts from them constantly. But like, let's be honest, the same parts are on a G37, a 370Z, and a Q50. I could park in a parking lot with other modified ones and there'll be crossover amongst a lot of the parts
Sure.
because they're the largest distributor that we have for them. And
No, I
feel like we've lost out a little bit on the creativity that you used to see back in the day when you were trying to ascend your, you know, the quote unquote ladder. You're going up and you're like, oh, you know what? That version of intake doesn't work. So now instead of leaving it in the engine bay, we put an extension on it and now it's actual true cold air. Now the car feels better. Now it's breathing better. Sounds better too. Oh my God, look how great it sounds as the car goes by. Those things I feel like we've lost out on over time as it's become more cookie cutter.
Yeah, I think from an enthusiast level, a DIYer level, I think you're right. I don't know, you could argue both ways that it's good or, you know, good and bad. Like I said, being able to get a modern vehicle now and then already have an idea of what type of power you're going to hit or what type of issues you're going to run into, because there's 100 guys already that are posting on social about, you know, the issues they've run into. It's pretty good. Yeah. It's pretty comfy. It is pretty comfy.
It makes life easier. Don't get me wrong. But I agree with you on that.
I think for myself, and I'm not trying to speak for Scott, but I think Scott's kind of in the same mindset. We already went through the trial and error portion, you know, in our earlier lives. So having that convenience now is kind of nice. We know, we have a lot more experience, I think. But looking back there, you know, I made a lot of mistakes, you know, like the cutting of the springs thing was terrible. I probably have back damage from that still. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of mistakes that I made, growing up and growing into this, but it was, you know, it was all fun though. You know what I mean? It was still fun.
I feel like part of that, see, I don't know. I'm looking at it through like those rose tinted glasses, but I felt like some of those experiences, like, yeah, it's absolutely devastating to blow an engine. Like it sucks. You know, you feel it in the pit of your stomach, but then, okay, I get to build an engine. I get to swap something different in. It creates these possibilities that you weren't originally looking at before. Like when the reason I did my RB swap on my Z32 originally is because the crankshaft keyway sheared off in my crankshaft on the stock VG30. There was no way I was fixing a NA VG30 to do this. Like there was no way. I was like, all right, you know what? Engine swap, let's go a different route. And at the time, the RB swap wasn't as common as it is now. There was only like two or three of us in the country that had it. So it was really kind of finding your own way. I had to find the guy that had motor mounts. I had to find the guy that could help me do the wiring because I had to convert, you know, things that I've never done. I had to get like help. You know, you said, there was no internet. There was no ability to just go out and be like, hey, this is what I'm doing. Do you have a solution for me? At that time, there wasn't one. And I feel like that's, you know, that's obviously at the very top of the ladder when you're doing it, but you do get there eventually and you will get to that point where it's like, hey, yeah, I'm not necessarily modifying my project car, my daily car anymore, but I have a project. And I feel like that's where that mod ladder changes, because when you get into the project car, you're going to be like, okay, I need an engine, a transmission, a wiring harness, fuel system. And you start piecing those together. Now, do you ever find yourself like on your bigger projects now, do you find yourself like group buying, like, oh, I'm going to do the rear end, so let me get diff bushings. Let me get the you know, upgraded diff carrier housing. You know, is that something that you find yourself doing more now, or are you still doing it the one piece at a time like you had before?
First of all, what's a rear diff?
Oh, no, front wheel drive. Yeah, I know. Oh, geez.
Yeah, I think for me, I think we talked about it before, but like with the last two cars that I built, I really kind of piled up the parts before I got started. You know, I had the funds available to do that. Not everyone does. And, you know, when I was younger, I certainly didn't. It was living paycheck to paycheck. But so I kind of got all the parts together, but I did tackle it in sections. So with the Civic project, it was like, I spent, you know, maybe 3 weeks just doing the suspension, replacing bushings and putting in some portions are spherical, you know, coilovers, all kind of stuff. So that was all done at once in one setting. And then I worked on the engine separately, interior separately. So all done in sections, but I had most of the parts already. I wasn't really ordering a ton of parts during the buildup. I kind of had them all piled up. I wish I could have done that when I was younger, but, you know, I couldn't afford it. I think looking back now, as long as I have the plan of attack beforehand, that's the way to do it. Get everything together, because a lot of times if you're working in one area and you don't have the rest of the parts, you might switch your attention over to like the interior for a while, right? And then you kind of get lost in and where you were. For me, just doing it in sections kept it like really uniform.
Yep.
And that was like probably the easiest build I've ever done because it was just so straightforward. Everything was there, you know. There was a few times I had to order parts and wait for them, but it's pretty rare.
That's actually one of the hardest parts about working in a speed shop. I can tell you from experience on this one. There was nothing worse than getting halfway into a project and going, oh, wait, we need XYZ order.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're looking at it and you're going, oh, why wasn't that customer didn't supply that, this, that, and the other thing, whatever it is, whatever the excuse was at the time, it becomes a massive roadblock into momentum. And as you said, then you also turn into the scatterbrain where you're like, okay, well, I'm waiting on this, so let me go build my fuel system. And then you don't know where you left off necessarily. Like, you can figure your way back, but let's be honest, it's a lot easier when you're in there to just keep that momentum on the project that you're doing or what you're doing and finish that versus hopping off of it, go do something else and come back to it. So yeah, that is definitely something as I've gotten older, I find myself doing as well with the project that I'm doing on the Z now. It's, I bought the components for the transmission. I'm buying the, you know, it's billet flex plate and this, that, and the other thing, whatever. Buying all the components at once before starting down the road of actually doing the job, because I don't want the car down for a while. You know, I want to be able to do what I have to do and move on to the next task.
Just to be clear also, like, if you're building the car, you're building the car. Like, as long as you're doing it, you're having fun with it, it's what you want to do, it's great. I'm just saying, from my perspective, looking back at older builds that I did compared to ones I've done a little bit more recently, the fact that having the parts already there helps a ton. And like you said, you can kind of get lost in where you were, and it's not the worst thing in the world, right? You make some notes, you know, where you left off. But I think for me, just being able to have them available and not have to wait, you know, 3 months for something to come in, it helped a lot. Now, I did make a few mistakes on this one where I should have waited on the powder coating and the Cerakote stuff. And I ended up going back to this shop to get stuff done more than once. I probably would have saved quite a bit of money if I had just grouped it all together. I think I just got a little bit excited and I was doing, like, you know, like powder coating the roll bar and a couple other pieces, and then you know, not doing the engine based stuff because I wasn't ready. I should have just waited and just give them a huge pile of stuff to just do all at once. So I did blow a little bit of money that way, but nothing crazy. But I do regret that portion of it. In the future, if I do build another car, I would certainly be a little bit smarter about that, because it does get a little bit expensive when you're, you know, you're having them do four or five parts as opposed to doing like a dozen parts where you can kind of get a little bit of a break in pricing. So, yeah.
So when you're building your car, I find myself doing the rough install. I'll go in, I'll put the major components in, do all my wiring, then pull stuff back out, take it to the final finish. So it's like, okay, this has to go to the powder coater, or I have to finish doing these connectors because they need to replace. Do you ever find yourself doing a build that way where it's almost like the two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back, but efficiently? I guess I could put it that way. Like, you have a plan where there's a mock-up, a disassembly, and a final assembly, if that makes sense.
No, only because I think like my last few projects compared to yours were a lot simpler. Mm. It's a pretty straightforward swap, right? Like, it's a case swap, and, you know, it's been done a billion times. So there's really no big surprises. So I didn't have to like install it and then uninstall it and, you know, that kind of thing. So when I prepped the engine, anything that I was going to like clean up or paint at home or whatever, I just, you know, I did it beforehand. So once the engine went in, it was in. That was pretty much it. I did have a leaky rear main seal, so I did have to sort of drop it down a little bit, but not all the way out. So I found that out when I started it up for the first time, but it happens.
So on those cars, you're able to just separate the transaxle and the engine just enough to actually slide up in there and replace it? Or do you have to pull it?
I just pulled off the trans. I just popped it off.
Oh,
and then, and I just popped it off and then got in there. You have to, you know, it takes a little bit of work. Unfortunately, it was right in the middle of summer. So it was like, I just remember it was like over 100 degrees. It was a little bit rough, but, you know, that's part of it. That's part of it.
Yeah. But that's looking what makes back, cars fun, right? That's the fun part of cars, right?
looking back, it was still, it was an experience and something, you know, you do on your own, and in my case, on my own, and I figured it out. And you know, once I finally got up and running and actually driving, it was like, you know, it was worth it. You know?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, that's part of the joy of it. Like, I feel like that's something that also comes from the building of the car. You know, as your, it's something you can put your name on. You hang your hat on it. Like, it's the you're proud of it. You completed that task, and even if it's something as simple as doing a lowering spring wheel and tire install, when you walk away from that car for the first time and you look back at it, there's something that feels, well, for me, it's an intoxicating feeling. It's one of those, like, it's one of those joys that you get in life. Be like, oh, I did that. I created that. I changed, you know, whatever it is, that was, I put my name on it. And I enjoy that.
I think, like, and when I see people that are going through that for like the first time or maybe the first or second time, it's pretty cool to see. I think one of the individuals we work with, Joyce Tech, who we talked about before, we supplied wheels for her Civic, basically her first car, right? And she's doing everything on her own. And she did like the brakes on her own and the suspension. And I think she had help in the vinyl wrap, but like, you know, she was hands-on with it. And I think she changed her head gasket recently as well in that car. And like, she's a first timer, and just watching her do it, it's pretty interesting to see. It's pretty cool. Yeah. I know that feeling when you first accomplish it and you get it, you turn the car back on and it actually works, and you're like, whoa, I did something right, you know? So I know that feeling, and I don't know if you can ever really get that back once you've kind of already gone through it. So it's pretty cool to watch, at least to see her do it.
I know you can't get it for the first time, but as I feel like you take on tougher and tougher projects, as we go up that quote unquote ladder, you start to find those bigger milestones where you still get that same feeling. It requires a harder task, but like,
yeah,
when, you know, the first time you're able to break into the tens, for instance, or break into the nines with a car, like something like that is one of those feelings. Like anytime you have one of those milestone accomplishments when it comes to our industry or our hobby, even, it's great. Like, I think that's what draws me to it in a lot of ways, is that it's something that I can tangibly feel accomplishment from. Like, you know,
right.
it's not something that's dictated by somebody else. You know, we're able to look at it and go, hey, you know, I was able to do this engine swap. I was able to put a B series in my 89 CRX or whatever. And the only thing I've ever done up until this point is changed oil, and look at what I've accomplished. You know, I think that's something that's, no matter if it's something as simple as that, or if it's something as complex as building a full project car, you still have that ascension, you know, the ascending the ladder, let's say, as you wanted to.
For you, you've seen it from both ends, because, you know, you worked at a shop for quite a while.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you probably had some guys that come in there and dropped off the car and like, you know, put this motor in there, I want these mods on it. Like, you know, let me know, I'll come pick it up in a month or whatever.
Oh yeah,
it is.
Happened all the time. So it was a different feeling.
Yeah, they don't touch it. You do all the work for them, and then they get it back. So for you, it's like the opposite side of that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that I think is the difference between necessarily the car builder and the car enthusiast. Like, there are enthusiasts that will drive a car, race a car, go out to the track, but they've never turned a wrench. And then you'll have the guys that will be out there turning wrenches and going out and racing, or turning wrenches and just enjoying the car. And we're all getting different joys from the vehicle, but we're all getting joy from the vehicles, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I think it's funny now, because when we're talking about this, and it makes me think of like the old days, but like with that CRX, I did, you know, the bolt-on stuff that you would typically do, because that was like during the street racing days. And everyone kind of had the same thing, right? The whole B series swap was just starting to kind of emerge and become a thing. In LA, it was bigger for sure. I was down in San Diego, but I remember thinking at the time, I'd heard about it, but I'd never even seen one in person, right? I just heard about it from word of mouth. And I actually found in the newspaper, in the classifieds, there was a section in there. It was like a shop that was just starting up, a guy that I kind of knew through friends or whatever. And it said, you know, we'll put a VTEC engine in your 88 to 91 Civic CRX for X amount of dollars. I don't know what it was at the time, probably $2,000 or something. And I was like, wow, there's somebody local that's doing this. And so I started talking to that person, and then they're like, yeah, we can do the swap, you know, like the shop's just getting set up or whatever. So I ended up doing my first swap there, with help, obviously. I didn't know what I was doing. So I was kind of learning as it went, and then paid less because of the fact that I was doing some of the labor. And I just remember thinking, like, this is so groundbreaking, because I'd never seen one before, you know? And so now I had one in my car. And so it was such a big deal at that time. But nowadays, it's just, you know, it's so much easier. You just go online, find the engine you want, order it, have it delivered. The swap kit, the, you know, whatever you need. You need a new shift linkage. You need, you know, whatever you need. It's so much easier. So, but I think, you know, the modern day enthusiast is sort of missing that portion of it. But maybe that's not such a bad thing, because it's just, life's a little bit easier now, you know?
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a lot different when you have a car that was, what, less than 100 horsepower, the factory CRX. Less than 100 horsepower. You go ahead, you put 160 horsepower engine in it. That was a big come up. Nowadays, you can tune a, you know, BMW and make that same come up and not do anywhere near the work.
I know. So it's a lot different, for sure.
It is different. I don't know if I like it, though. Like, I think I'm a little bit jaded. I enjoy the car build. I'm a hot rodder through and through. Like, I was talking to Jim earlier today, and even if it's a new car, I'm still that hot rod mentality. I'm like, what engine can I swap in? What drama can I create with this thing that it shouldn't be doing? Like, you know, I enjoy that aspect of it. I think that's why I like ruffling your feathers with the Lambo doors, just because it's funny. Because it's like, oh, I know that, really, let's be honest, they don't belong on a Z32, but they kind of belong on a Z32. You know, so it's one of those things where I enjoy that aspect of it. And I think that was something that I always had when I was building cars. It was always, let me put a set of Mustang wheels on my S13, because Cobra R's were 17x9 plus 25 offset. And I was like, those will fit. And I throw them on, throw the biggest tire I could. And I made some dumb decisions. I mean, I blew up my SR20 and my S13 because I decided to try to run as much boost as possible, thinking that the engine would handle it. Because the only way you're going to know what the limit of the engine is by blowing it up.
I'm saying this was when I was
in high school, or just out of high school. But yeah, I think a lot of people avoid that now, but I don't know if the car culture is better for it. I think we might have a little bit of, it's a lot easier to just go and click a button and have it versus earning it, which.
Well, that's a good question. So we should probably ask that. So if you're watching this and you kind of, obviously you're gonna have an opinion, maybe you're a little bit more old school, maybe you're a modern enthusiast. Do you prefer the way things are now, where it's all searchable, you know, tap of a button, you get the stuff delivered to you, and it's all kind of like laid out for you? Or do you prefer the older times when it was like trial and error, you know, a couple guys in the garage just trying to figure it out, probably making some dumb mistakes like I did.
Let us
know. you might know. And then also, in terms of the mod ladder, where do you start? Like, is it suspension first? Is it wheels and tires? Is it only power? Like,
that sounds like a great idea, Matt. Why don't we go ahead and put the comments down below? Like and subscribe, and catch us on the next Behind the Wheel podcast.